Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
I'm delighted to be joined by Doug Keating of Avalon and Linda Daly, a business reporter with the Sunday Times, two regular contributors to this slot. You're both very welcome to the show. Linda, I'm going to start with you. The Trump thing hasn't gone away, you know. Trump pushes for minimum tariff of 15 to 20% on all goods from the EU. Now, this has been moving at such a rate, it's almost hard to see where we are now.
Yeah.
There's been to-ing and fro-ing and, you know, mood music and saber rattling and all sorts of things. But maybe try and bring us to where we actually are now, Linda, if you would.
Yeah, look, I have whiplash myself.
Lucky I mean, you on this one, Linda.
Earlier on in the week, it was 30%. So yeah. If you don't keep up, you just lose track, don't you? So
yeah.
Apparently now he's pushing a minimum for a minimum of 15 to 20%. This is an article in the Irish Times today, but it's actually taken from the Financial Times. So it's, you know, the EU has kind of been reticent to push back. I'm of the view that you should tackle a bully head on. I'd never be a diplomat, I'll tell you that. But the EU is reticent to push back. It hasn't done anything. The deadline is August the 1st. He was saying he's going to introduce 30% on August the 1st, but now it's kind of a minimum of 15 to 20%, which the Americans will feel in their pocket. And then obviously our companies will struggle because of it, you know.
Doug, this to-ing and fro-ing kind of puts the EU in a bit of a bind as its approach, as it approaches at this August deadline when Trump is talking about the 30% tariffs. So they're really going to be bounced into taking an aggressive approach here by the looks of things.
Well, it is tricky. And actually, the second article you picked for today is Dan Mulhall, who was the former Ireland's representative in the US during the Trump first presidency. So he kind of knows how things work. And the EU is in a tricky position. Both articles talk about the EU planning a potential retaliatory package worth circa 70 billion euros on US products. And this is the problem here, that we, you know, both sides start escalating up the rhetoric. And as Linda said, I would share her views that for consumers and Joe Public, I don't think tariffs are likely good for either side of the Atlantic. Dan Mulhall says Donald Trump's ambition to conclude 90 agreements in 90 days will clearly not be realised. And I think that's true. And what he puts perspective on is really trade talks don't work like Donald Trump thinks. They are very long, boring, fraught processes. He talks about the Uruguay round of the world.
Less than 10 years. It
took him like 10 years.
Yeah.
And you're into proper weeds. So Donald Trump announces what he calls a trade deal, but it's kind of, as far as I can tell, a kind of heads of agreement that, you know, someone might backfill later. Mm. But he also makes the point, and I do believe this to be true, that Trump's belief in tariffs is deeply held and longstanding. And you can read articles going back to the 80s and 90s where, you know, he has a very clear view that sort of America is being wronged. Access to American markets demands a price, and he views tariffs as a way to achieve that. So where do we land? Well, you gave Linda the invidious job of trying to summarize. And I think the reality is we have absolutely no idea. There is this 1st of August deadline, inverted commas. Where will it go? It was 30%, 15%, 20% now, 10% baseline. Look, I hope we get to somewhere sensible.
Linda, just to close out on this and around Dan Mulhall's piece, he says the upheavals of Trump 2 may end up doing the EU a favour. I don't really see that, in the sense that we're going to have to find new markets, and finding new markets is never easy. We found that from Brexit.
Yeah, I suppose what he's trying to say is that we kind of stop our over-reliance on the American market and maybe look east, you know, to China, which means essentially that the American market will ultimately move out. And I don't think the markets now, the globalization, is the way Donald Trump spoke about when he was in the 1980s advocating for these tariffs. So it'll be very interesting to see how it all pans out.
And these tariffs, Doug, are a sort of a backdrop to our next piece, because the government is talking tough about its spending plans for next year to be announced in the budget that we have in October. But we've got this summer economic statement next week. Matt Cooper is talking about it in today's Mail. What do you reckon of his thinking on all this?
Well, look, I mean, I think Matt is right in that he is pointing to the fact that there's been a huge amount of chat in advance of this statement, where the government is obviously trying to sort of frame the tough talk and, you know, set the expectations around what will and won't happen. So the big thing that's come through for me in recent days has been this idea that the sort of one-off energy tenor for this, fiver for that, and it would cost us 2.2 billion euros last year, the so-called cost of living packages, that is off the table for 2025. And, you know, maybe we will see that reflected in the statement next week. You'd have to imagine that, you know, you talk super tough and then, you know, the reality isn't quite as painful.
A bit like Trump.
And Matt Cooper's column cites the student, that there's been a talk around student fees, etc., where Simon Harris seems to have kind of rolled back a little bit on how
packaged as something else,
how harsh that will be. But actually, the thing that really struck me in this column, and Bobby, it might resonate with you, was Matt had been speaking to Oliver Dunn, who's a restaurateur, owns about 10 restaurants.
And we know him well, yeah.
He was saying anecdotally business down around 20% this year. So I suppose this is to Linda's point on tariffs, like, where are we at on the economy? I think the government is right to be cautious that, you know, things could turn pretty quickly. Tariffs are not looking great. We need to be cautious. And so I guess that's what this
conversation
will look
at. And as well as referencing Oliver Dunn's restaurants and his rather pessimistic view of sales and business, he also talked about people not going to GAA games, numbers being smaller, rugby matches.
Now, he does mention
I'm not sure.
That felt like a reach on the anecdotal evidence versus Oliver Dunn's comments. But, you know.
No, I'm with you on that. Linda, can I ask you about the Cantillon piece? Which really, I think, ties in what we've been talking about this morning, but that the investors are not yet put off by the global uncertainty. This has surprised a lot of people, in that we always, and as you know yourself from your reporting in the Times, that it's, you know, we're the markets really dictate a lot, but they don't seem to be hugely influenced by the massive uncertainty that we've had.
Yeah, I suppose it's kind of gone the opposite way. It's the highest, the stock market in the US is the highest that it has been. In April anyway, it hit a record high. And I suppose really you'd wonder, is this because there's this kind of, you know, the taco phrase, Trump always chickens out. So you'd wonder, is there a denial that something's going to happen around tariffs? But even in Ireland, you know, savings are up to government revenue stood at 30.9 billion, the CSO said at the end of the quarter.
And 2 billion,
two
up
billion ahead, yeah. So we are still up at the moment. We're very reliant, obviously, on corporate taxes, tax receipts as well. So you would wonder, is do the two things not translate to each other? You know, are the consumers feeling different, as in Matt's column, you know, if it's not translating to the bottom line?
He also it's also pointed out here about the increase in capital gains tax, which generally, I know this can be distorted by a couple of big deals, but it does mean that people are selling and buying assets or businesses.
Yeah, maybe it's a lot of landlords kind of getting out of the market, as people keep telling us. But there's a lot of capital gains tax. And we have been an economy that has had a lot of savings since COVID, you know, not myself personally, but other people have had it. So there's still a lot of money floating around.
Let's look at a corporate story, Doug, in terms of the results from Primark Limited out yesterday, I think it was. This is a stellar business, founded all those years ago by Arthur Ryan here in Dublin. But it really has gone. Its turnover in Ireland is like 15 million a week over 38 shops. It's a serious business.
It's a serious business. I mean, this is interesting because it's not really the company's formal results. This is a filing they've made in the company's records office. And Gordon Deegan is a journalist who's brilliant at ferreting out these sorts of stories. Pre-tax profits for the entity, 881 million euros, which the papers report as, you know, over 2 million euros a day being made in Penny's slash Primark, and revenue across the business up to 4.1 billion. But that, I think, is a global number. For the Irish stores, revenue was relatively flat. The results talk about weather impacting performance last year, but there was the opening of a new store in Bray offsetting that. What I found interesting, though, the company did give a statement to Gordon, and very positive about future plans and ambitious plans for expansion in Ireland. There's new stores planned, as I understand it from the article, Limerick, Portlaoise, Ennis. They're talking about increasing their retail footprint in Ireland by around 20%. And as you said at the beginning, Primark, Penny's, it's just this amazing story of a business founded in Ireland that is now, you know, all over Europe, as far as I can tell, doing brilliant in its expansion into the US, which has been a graveyard for many Irish companies that have tried and failed. They seem to be getting it right. So, yeah, look, happy days.
Anything to add, Linda?
Yeah, I mean, they've taken a slow approach to the expansion in the US, which I think is the right thing to do. I suppose with Penny's, like, if you just see it, they really committed to bricks and mortar, more so than digital. And like they went into the square in Tala, and that transformed the square. I mean, it's so busy now. So people, kids still, and adults still love it. You know?
They're a super anchor tenant for anybody who's lucky to have them.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, hopefully. This next piece kind of surprised me slightly, because we're told by Ian Curran from the Irish Times that motorists now can spend 10,000 annually to keep the car running. This is research done by OutSurance. To me, and I went through the article, it seemed really it's based on fuel, insurance, depreciation, maintenance. But I still find it hard to find 10 grand there.
Yeah, so,
or
well,
maybe that's just me.
It resonated with me, Bobby, because it took as the average car, or the most best-selling car, the Hyundai Tucson, which my wife happened to choose as the car we bought secondhand, I might add, last year. So this article was close to my heart, and actually even close to my heart was the point that I would say, you know, don't buy cars because they just depreciate a lot and you're better just to run them into the ground. And this article really does bring that home. Of that 10 grand, you talk about the cost of running a car, 6,000 of that is the depreciation. So, you know,
So in your case, by way of example, where you buy a secondhand car, you're not looking at numbers like that.
Probably not, because you're not paying the sticker price.
Somebody else has taken the depreciation.
But even let's just ignore the depreciation and help our listeners think about the, you know, because you tend not to, you don't think about filling it up with petrol. You don't add it all up. So this is talking about 1,500 euros a year in fuel, 600 euros in insurance, about 800 in maintenance. And then there must be about another grand, I think it has, in kind of other odds and sods. And we do forget that the cost of running a car, which is, you know, my little justification for being environmental, is, you know, run a one-car family. You don't necessarily need two cars. And actually, if you do add depreciation in and you say a cost of running a car is 5 to 10 grand a year, actually that would pay for a few taxis, renting a car here and there when you need it, rather than actually running a second car, which I think a lot of families are now thinking about as they look at cost of living issues and how to save money.
Any thoughts on that, Linda? Do you agree with the numbers?
Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose it is less than 4 grand if you take out the depreciation. But I remember interviewing somebody once and they said as soon as you walk out of the forecourt with a new car, it halves in value. So yeah. I was pleasantly surprised.
No, the first guy takes the depreciation.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying if you look at it, if you buy a second-hand car, the figures are immensely different.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose, But then you might have to pay more in repair costs.
Who knows, yeah. Let's talk golf, Linda, because I know you're a stellar supporter of the said sport. With the Open on up north at the moment, there's been a lot of talk about the contribution to the economy. I saw some narrative around price gouging and all that sort of stuff. But there's an interesting investment proposed from the Galgorm collection. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Galgorm collection, which is owned by the Hill family, is going to invest in the first championship links golf course in 100 years, more than 100 years in the north. So they're investing 30 million to create a golf course up near the Giant's Causeway. So Doug tells me that's where it is. And it's not far away from the Royal Portrush, where the Open is happening at the moment. So I suppose there's a lot of debate around whether land in Ireland should be given over to private golf courses. But I mean, I was actually at the Heritage in Laois a few weeks ago, and there was a lovely walkway around the golf course. And I thought if more golf courses were open in that way to the public.
Because when you think about golf tourism and the amount of revenue it brings in, like, and even to look at what's happening up at the Open and all, like, it's I think it's just wonderful. And I don't think there's been enough investment in golf in recent years. It paid a huge price during the last recession, and it's probably only recovering now. But
Doug, I mean, this article is talking about golf tourism, and I think it's just in the north being worth 100 million euros a year, and that's up 66% since in 2019 when Royal Portrush first hosted the Open. So it's obviously been, that has been a beacon that has attracted golfers from all over the world. I suspect particularly kind of Americans coming in wanting to play this course that they've seen on the TV. And yes, it is. It's definitely a good money spinner and bringing in tourists.
I'm not sure I'm in agreement with the headline that's in the business pages of the Irish Examiner saying joining a golf club in Ireland is as affordable as joining a gym. This is according to Golf Ireland, who are saying the average cost of a golf club membership in Ireland is now under 650 euros. That's not my experience.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, I guess what
maybe somebody else out there is.
I guess
is a better shopper.
They're
than
trying
me.
To suggest. So let's imagine a gym costs you, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a member of a gym, but say it costs you 40, 50 euros a month, that would be circa 600 euros a year. And they're saying the average golf club membership is under 650 euros a year. I would hazard to say that anyone living within 100 kilometres radius of Dublin, well done if you can find a golf club membership for that cost. But there is a more, I suppose, the thrust of the article is Golf Ireland trying to talk about how, you know, they've made more golf more accessible and more people getting on board. So there's 223,000 members, I think, of clubs in Ireland. They say there's close to 400,000 casual golfers in total, i.e. members, people are members plus then an extra people who might go out and play. Membership's up 20% in the last 5 years. And also you're seeing, you know, we have Royal Portrush, the British Open, but, you know, we have the Women's Irish Open was in Carlton House recently.
We've Dare coming up.
Yeah, 37,000 people, you know, went to Carlton House to see the Women's Irish Open. So it is becoming more of a spectator event. But Linda, I think that's interesting, your concept of golf clubs to get away from this sort of snootiness and lack of accessibility. Maybe just simple things like, you know, access to walk your dog somewhere around the course, all these kind of things could help.
Yeah, but not on the course, obviously.
No.
I was the daughter of an avid golfer. I think I may have spoken about it on this show before. And my dad had to pay his fees to the Curragh Golf Club at the end of January every year. And my poor sister's birthday was on the 21st of January.
So her presents were small.
Sometimes not forthcoming, I can tell you that. So, yeah.
But she had a happy father, so that was okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's have a quick look at some investment advice that's coming via the Irish Independent today. What 10 investment mistakes do you need to watch out for? I don't know, we won't go through them all, but did any of them sort of perk your interest, Doug?
Yeah, like, I mean, so there's 10 examples given. This is by Dan Malone in the Irish Independent. But I guess the three that jumped out for me, number one was investing for the wrong reasons. So kind of you read about something in the paper like kind of crypto or some company
it's
that catch your
stuff.
Fancy and you pile in, you know, bad idea, this will not end well. The second one was urging people to think about fees and, you know, how to, minimize those. So investing in index funds, trying, you know, because actually compounding over several years, the fees can really eat into your investment. And the third one, and I will confess that I'm sometimes bad on this, but trying to time the market, like you shouldn't be sitting there going, oh, like Linda said earlier, the S&P 500 is at an all-time high. Maybe I should wait. Maybe it'll go down. Actually, if you take a 15, 20, 25-year view, the S&P 500 will definitely be higher. And then so just to drip money in over time and not worry about market timing.
What I liked in this, Linda, the one that I take away from me was having no long-term strategy that, you know, people that if basically, you know, that day trading, people think they're investing, well, they're actually day trading. And it's estimated that 95% of day traders lose money in the market and the vast majority quit within 1 year. I didn't know that.
Well, I suppose it's the stress of it probably that gets to you.
Well, you lose enough money, you find something else.
Yeah, I mean,
to do.
You'd be better off, you know, playing cards or gambling on the horses. Like, day trading is just, I think, you know, another form of getting your highs from gambling.
Yeah.
Linda, will you bring us through the Coldplay saga? Because this is a wonderful story. It's been around all week, but it's about, and most people know about it, about the cozy couple, the work colleagues, exposed by a camera, a webcam, live on stage at a Coldplay concert in Boston. And it seems that the tech boss at the centre of this could potentially be down $40 million as a result of an indiscretion.
Yeah, so lots of people may have seen what happened at Coldplay, at the Coldplay concerts, which I was at last year. He goes around on the screen, they have this kiss cam. Yeah. So basically, they would have known, it's only like one section during the concert, so they would have known that this kiss cam was coming. They probably should have separated themselves, but that's another story. It showed them, your man hopped down as quick as anything, and it's literally the Streisand effect. Everybody's now talking about it. Look, we don't know anything about their marriages at all. We don't know whether they are still happily married or they have open marriages or they're separated. But there is a business element to this, because people were quick to find the company, the CEO. It's a company called Astronomer. She is the head of HR there as well. So they're now investigating this. They raised a lot of money before it happened. And they're saying basically that if he is found to have done something nefarious, that he could be on the hopper for $40 million. Look, I suppose I was thinking maybe he hopped down because he thought, oh, I don't want my staff to know that I'm going out with this executive. But we don't know. We don't know.
Doug, the company boasts its staff are committed to excellence, keeping customers first and staying focused on bringing AI solutions to the world. I'm not sure that was sort of borne out by this behaviour at this concert.
I mean, as Linda says, this is a tricky one, and I'm kind of reluctant to be drawn too much onto the situation. Although I was reading the article, reminded of Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay, and Gwyneth Paltrow, who famously consciously uncoupled, and my fear might be that there could be some conscious uncoupling either between the company and the executives, or potentially in relationships in future. But you know, hopefully everyone can get through this.
All right, we've 30 seconds to talk about the national anthem. Sinn Féin TD suggesting that it should be compulsory teaching in all schools for tomorrow's match. Linda, do you know every word for word?
I do not. I know Sina Fina Fall. That's it.
A Tofuin Gaelic
Erring. That's it. That's
so Doug was also giving us the Irish and English version earlier on, which I thought was very impressive, his bilinguality.
Well, all I would say is I actually agree with the Sinn Féin TD. I think it's a good idea and all our children should learn in the schools. And I also agree that you should have it up on, he's saying should have it up on screens in Croke Park or Lansdowne Road to help us along, those of us who maybe forget, like Linda and I.
Linda and Doug, thank you for a great review of the papers.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.